Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. From CBS Sports, the Nothing Personal podcast, he's the former president of the Miami Marlins. He is David Sampson. And David, great to have you back with us. How are you, sir?
Happy to be back. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we're sitting here in trade deadline anticipation. And we've been chatting about this all morning. We couldn't wait to get you on the phone with us because as a guy who ran the Miami Marlins, you know how it's done. What happens in a trade? How does a trade go down? Do you pick up the phone and say, hey, Steve, I'm really interested in this guy. What do you think? How does it happen?
So let's go back to the first step that happens when you are in the middle of a season. Forget the fact that this is a truncated season that's just been so crazy on so many levels from an on-field standpoint. But you identify with your scouts, with your coaching staff, with your development people, what are the needs at the major league team? And that's after, and we haven't even talked about this, and I won't spend much time on it, the discussion that the GM has to have with the owner about whether or not there's any money that either is allowed to be taken on or any money that has to be shed. So the first step in the deadline is the owner has to give the GM the final say. Hey, we can take on up to $5 million, or hey, we've got to save $5 million. So without that information, there are no trades. So then the GM has that information, meets with his people, they identify needs, and then they decide what window they are currently in. Like in the Indians' case, are they at the end of a window? Are they at the beginning of a window? Are they going to keep Lindor? Are they going to trade him? What do they feel about their starting pitching? Do they feel they can live without one or two starters, including Clevinger? So they go through those different internal decisions. Then there are scouts who are assigned to other major league teams. The scouts provide reports about different possible acquisition targets by position. So you have a list of positions and a list of acquisitions, and then you've got another column that has the money side. Here's this player. Here's how much money this player has left to be paid. Then the GM decides what calls are going to be made. The first call goes at the lower level, maybe assistant GM, maybe even scouts or people in development who would call people on the other team and say, hey, what are you guys looking at? What are you guys looking for? What do you need? And then you're trying to get information. Is it possible that one of your acquisition targets could be made available? And you don't tell the other team what you're looking for. You don't tell them who you're looking for. You tell them what you're looking for. Yeah, we're probably looking. We could use another starter, maybe a bullpen arm. Then you wait for the other team to say, hey, listen, we've got John Doe and Jane Doe, and, you know, we've talk about them. So all trades start with those words. Yeah, we could talk about them. Then you start the process of getting into a little more detail. Then you bring in the GMs after there's been initial conversation below. And then you find out whether or not it's real. And I have a quick, funny story about that. Sorry to talk so long about
this
question, but it's pretty cool to think about.
This is fantastic.
That it is possible that at the scout level, where there's so much banter during the course of a game, back when scouts would watch games together at the ballpark, that a scout would go to his GM and say, hey, listen, you know, the Indians are going to talk about Lindor. They need to move him. Or the Indians need to move money so we can, there's a deal to be made there. Then you call the GM of the Indians and you say, hey, will you talk about Lindor? And Antonetti would say, no, why do you ask? And you say, well, we heard. And that's a very common thing, that often there is miscommunication or a misdirection on the lower levels, where when GMs talk, they get right down to what is real and what is not, because the GMs are focused both above, meaning to the owners and the money part, and below to the scouts and the personnel part. So no trade is real until two GMs get together and they both agree that certain players are in play. Then you start with an offer that you guarantee will not be accepted. You say, listen, I'll talk about Lindor, but it's going to take the following five guys. Your three top prospects in your top 10 and two people off your major league roster. And the other team would say, listen, there's no way that we're going to do that. We won't even talk about player X and player Y. But you know what? We could talk about one guy off our major league roster and then a top prospect. So that is what's called forming the bid and the ask. So then the GMs have an idea of what the conversation will be about. Then each GM goes back to his room with his scouts and his advisors and says, all right, this is the makings of a possible trade that we want versus what we think they're willing to give. Then the GMs continue to talk, and then the presidents get involved. When the presidents get involved, it is not player-related. It is generally money-related, because if you've got an expensive player who you are trying to trade, it would take the president to say to the other team president, listen, we'll take this guy, but we're not going to take on more than $6 million. We're just not going to do it. So you got to find a way to put more money into the deal. And that happens a lot at the president level. And on a very rare occasion, we would unleash our owner, but very rare. Wow. We leave the owner at the last minute when a deal has been agreed to. So we'll fast forward a little bit. A deal gets agreed to at the GM level, at a president level, but you always have an out. It's like an inspection out when you buy a house if you find a termite. The out is, listen, we just got to confirm with the owner. We just got to make sure. I can't tell you how many trades we thought were done, and we'd get a call back and say, hey, our owner won't do it. Hey, the owner changed his mind. And we would use our owner as leverage. When the owner wouldn't care about that trade or he agreed to a trade, we would often say, listen, the owner just won't do that. The best example I can give you is when the Marlins got Jeff Conine for the World Series run many years ago. We were told that Peter Angelos of the Angels had said no to the trade because he loved Jeff Conine as a person on a trade him. And so the only way to convince the owner to trade him is we'd have to give another top prospect. And we were desperate, and we gave in. Many years later, after Conine and I were friends, we were having a drink, and I said, by the way, I can't believe you've never talked about this. How close were you with Peter Angelos? And he asked me why I would say that, and I said, because when we were trading for you, Peter Angelos wouldn't trade you because of his close relationship to you, and that surprised me. And Conine said, David, I had never met him.
Oops.
So that's how it goes at the trade deadline.
Wow.
Wow.
David, that's great.
So is there any time in a trade deadline setting where, let's say, you make the preliminary calls and you go through that stuff and you get shocked by something that you never thought would happen? For example, some player is now available that initially you were like, whoa, didn't know that guy was even going to be on the table, where you would go back to the owner and say, hey, this player is on the table and he makes us good right now. What can we do?
So that is a great question. That would always raise my antenna when there would be someone who'd be considered untradeable throughout the course of an off season and into the beginning months of a season, and all of a sudden becomes available. I would then actually get involved and try to understand what went on, because often there's been a problem in the clubhouse or maybe an off-the-field problem. So we would start doing our homework, and we would send out anyone in the organization who had a relationship with anyone in the other organization, because so many baseball people change teams, and I don't mean players. I mean people in the front office. They go from team to team. So we would often say, all right, we're about to do a trade with the Indians. Who do we have in our system who has been with the Indians? All of a sudden, Clevinger's available when he was untouchable, as an example. What happened? Did something happen off the field? Did something happen in the clubhouse? Did something happen? Is he hurt? Are they hiding some sort of medical issue? Because when an untouchable player becomes touchable, there's two reasons only. One reason is financial, and the other reason is an acute situation that has made it untenable for that player to stay on that particular team, which means you can take great advantage of that team.
Do you think that's where the Indians are with Clevinger, David? And David Sampson joining us from CBS Radio, former president of the Marlins. Is Clevinger there, or do you think the Indians still have a little bit of leverage in that situation?
It would shock me if they trade him. And I talked about this a little bit on Nothing Personal. I was shocked that they brought him up to start on Wednesday. I thought they'd keep him down the full 20 days so they could get the financial benefit, because that's what I would have done. But in order for the Indians, if they're keeping Lindor, which they made a decision to do, they're a half game out, I think, right now, and the top two teams make the playoffs. And the key is to get into the playoffs, because after that, everybody's on the same sort of playing field, because you need luck and you need clutch two-out hits and you need some pitchers to step up who you wouldn't have expected in order to make it through the gauntlet of October and win a ring. So if the Indians made their bed that they weren't going to trade Lindor, then you got to go in with as much pitching as you can possibly have, especially as you see how this season is unwinding. And I get the Indians could use an outfield bat. I really do. I get that Lindor is a diminishing asset because he's going to be worth less and less on the trade market. And I get that Clevinger went out on a Saturday night in Chicago. But when you talk about what his ability is and what he can do in a playoff series, I think you're making a mistake by trading a pitcher like that.
Would you maybe look to trade a guy like Plesac then, who's a little bit younger?
So I'm not trading anyone this year, and I want to explain why. There is such a premium right now on cheap, overperforming players. We don't know. I said we. It's they. It's not a we. I'm now in the media. They don't know what their revenue looks like next year. So when I go to the owner and say, here, I need to know the payroll for the next 2 years, because when we're building the team, we're projecting out this payroll over 2 years, and we're figuring out how long our window is to win. Right now, if I'm the owner, I'm saying, I don't know our payroll next year. I don't know if we're going to have fans. I don't know what's happening with revenue sharing, if they're going to change the rules. I don't know if there's going to be a lockout after 2021 when the collective bargaining agreement runs out. We've got to keep as flexible as we can be and our payroll as low as it can be while staying as competitive as possible. And the way to do that is with young, performing pitching, and that's what the Indians have.
David Sampson joining us, former president of the Marlins, now CBS Radio. You mentioned Frankie Lindor. I get the feeling with you, it's not a question of if you trade him, it's when you trade him, David. So with that in mind, when would you trade him?
So I would have traded him last offseason. And now that I didn't, there's two types of players when they're heading to free agency, when you know you're not going to be able to sign them. And we had players, and we did this both ways. Sometimes we traded players with 2 years left until free agency, and sometimes we let players go when they were free agents and just took back the draft pick because we wanted that player to try to help us win in that window. And if we were going to win the World Series or make the playoffs or have some sort of run, we were willing to let that player walk and gain the benefit of having one with him. I think you can't be in the middle. And if they trade Lindor after this season with 1 year left, I think that's sort of in the middle, where you're not getting what you should and in return, and you're not getting his performance before he's a free agent. So either you trade him or you can get a lot of return when he's got at least 2 years left until free agency, or you ride him out and take the pick, and that's what I would do.
So we saw a deal between the Blue Jays and the Mariners involving Taijuan Walker for a player to be named later. Are we going to see a decent amount of those with a player to be named later just because of, you know, not having scouts at these alternative facilities?
So let me explain what that is. In my day, we would call it player to be named later or cash. And that's when we would trade a player for like a dollar or $10. I did a lot of that where we'd give you a dollar or for a player that no one that the other team didn't want. And in order to have the GM look good, you say player to be named later or cash. This year, it's slightly different. A player to be named later means a player who is not in the 60-man pool that every team has. Because the only players eligible to be traded right now are players in the 60-man pool. So what happened in that trade is that it was for a minor league player not invited to the 60-man pool, so he will be named at the conclusion of the season.
Makes total sense.
I'm ready for Monday. David, one last thought. Do the Indians make a deal, and is it a biggie?
You know, the Indians have shown that they would do deals, but again, Trevor Bauer was one of those situations where that was not tenable. He had to be traded when he showed up, Tito. So to me, that doesn't count as doing a deal. I think teams are going to trade on the margins. I don't think there'll be any blockbusters because teams are going to be very reticent to give up top prospects for the reasons that we stated earlier in this conversation. So I think you'll have some smaller trades like what we saw with the Mariners and Blue Jays, but nothing major. I do not see the Indians trading from their strength, which is their starting pitching. So anything they do may be a marginal bat that they can add to their pool, someone who could get a few at-bats, maybe a few clutch hits for them, but not giving up one of their good players to get him.
David Sampson, thank you very much,
thank you.
From CBS Sports Nothing Personal Podcast, former president of the Marlins. We always appreciate you being with us.
Hey, have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right,
man.
David. Thank you very much. And you can follow David on Twitter at David P. Sampson, S-A-M-S-O-N, S-A-M-S-O-N, at David P. Sampson.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.